Hey, everybody, before we dive into this week's episode, where Joe and I will spend some time talking about meat transport after a successful hunt, and where I sit down with Eric Clark and talk about Okayus Hunter and the place that humility and humor has in hunting. And so before that, I wanted to share an incredible opportunity with you I've been reminding you guys about over the last few weeks. Last September, I experienced an amazing Canadian moose hunt in British Columbia. And now, through our partnership with WTA, Worldwide Trophy Adventures, you too have the chance to go on this same adventure hunt. So you can picture yourself in the vast Canadian wilderness on a guided hunt with top-of-the-line equipment from Gunworks and Leupold that are also part of the giveaway. You'll also have an expert guide by your side, and you'll be in comfortable tented camps, fully immersed in the beautiful Canadian wilderness. So go apply, and remember, actually, every sweepstakes ticket you purchase, you earn bonus bucks for future adventures with WTA. So don't miss this chance to experience one of the best hunts of your life. It's something that I'll be telling my grandchildren about. For more details, go click the link I told you about. Check out Worldwide Trophy Adventures right now, and happy hunting. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fair Chase Podcast. Excited to be coming to you when it's in the 70s outside here in Michigan. That's pretty cool. Joe, thanks for joining. The 70 by you in Ohio right now.
67, it says in the truck, so pretty much.
Classic. Nice. Just a little bit worse than Michigan.
Pretty usual.
Per freaking usual. Well, we wanted to, we got an interesting interview coming up with Eric Clark of Okayus Hunter on the second half of our podcast today. But Joe and I were talking about just getting ready for spring, all the things that go into it. And one that we haven't talked much about on this podcast is traveling with meat, safe meat handling, if you will.
Handle a lot of meat.
Yeah, get a lot of meat. You got to travel with your meat, got to figure out how to do it well and get it home. And so we figured we'd take some time, especially going to like things like bear hunting. A lot of people will be traveling west or north to bear hunt this spring. So we wanted to kind of go through some of our experiences traveling with, you know, stuff we've killed in the past. And we were talking earlier, I think between the two of us, we've pretty much exhausted every way of traveling with meat other than just throwing it on our backs and walking home from wherever we are.
Really, the only thing that I haven't done is the freight option, like doing the FedEx freight kind of thing. And it's just because every other option that we've done has been so successful. I still to this date have not lost an ounce of meat in any form of travel. So
no, same. Same. Even driving cross country, the moose had no issues getting it back. Didn't lose any of it. No, I looked into doing some of that freight cargo stuff, especially from like Alaska for doing like, you know, I was doing a caribou hunt a couple of years ago or whatever. And like, there's some really doable stuff with freight, especially like Alaska. But if you Google or check out Rock Slide, there's some pretty in-depth stuff around certain, basically what people will do is you bring them your meat, they throw it in a freezer when they're ready to make their cross country trek in a truck. They just cruise around. They stop at different cities. You meet them there, and you grab whatever stuff you gave them, whether it's hide, cape, you know, meat, whatever.
Yeah. There's even some, like, freight options that they put it on a pallet and next day air it, too. It wasn't as expensive as I thought it would be, but the traditional buy the Coleman coolers, do the dry ice kind of thing has worked out famously. So
yeah, well, let's dive into that then, because that's like the... That's the one I've done probably, other than driving, which, you know, I know you've probably never driven an animal home because, you know, you don't like to drive. I'm surprised you're driving right now, but let's dive into that. Tell me, when you say the typical Coleman dry ice deal, like, what are you referring to? Like, walk me through. Say you get a bear down, how do you do that? OnX is the title sponsor of our podcast here at the Fair Chase, and it's a must-have app for all of us who love to explore the outdoors. Whether you're hunting or hiking or fly fishing, OnX gives you detailed, accurate maps right at your fingertips. With property boundaries, topographical features, and trail data, you'll always know where you are and where you're headed. You'll also likely be able to figure out where that big buck is headed to. Plus, their offline maps mean you're covered even in the most remote locations. OnX is the ultimate tool for outdoor navigation, making every adventure safer and more enjoyable. Download OnX today and explore with confidence.
Yeah, so like, for example, we're flying to bear hunt this year. Most springs we fly into Billings or Bozeman, and Idaho Falls, whatever, major city in the West, and fly out there with a rifle case and a 40-gallon tote that has my pack and everything else gear-wise in it, and don't really have anything to bring meat back with if you're successful. Meat, hide, skull, all that. And this might be true with elk hunts too. I've done this with elk, deer, caribou, sheep, whatever. So you go hunting, get something down, quarter it, hang in a tree, get it cool. Whether we're up in Libby, Montana, or around Bozeman, Billings, wherever, there's always a Walmart or a Fred Meyer or a Costco that's going to have those blue or red 40-quart coolers that are $19.99, right? So we'll take either quartered animals or deboned animals, depending on the size and depending on how much you're flying back with, or what the situation is, how early you shot it in the week. And we'll cut the meat up and put it into Ziploc bags, or we'll leave them in full quarters and put dry ice on top of it. Now, dry ice on top will freeze everything below. You put dry ice below, it'll still be kind of soft to the touch on the top. It'll be cold. Yep. So if you shoot one really early in the week and you don't want to freeze it necessarily right away, you want it to be cuttable or pliable. Say you shoot one day one or day two and the other guys still have tags. Put it on the bottom, keeps it cold, not frozen. And then when you have a free half day or something like that, then you can debone the animal, put it all in Ziploc bags or vacuum seal it if you have a buddy in town or something like that, and then get it ready to fly. The trick with it is that I've kind of learned over the years is it is cheaper to check multiple bags that are underweight as opposed to one 70-quart Yeti cooler with all your shit in it and it's 210 pounds kind of thing. You're going to pay a fortune for that. But for Delta, Alaskan, United, any of the major decent airlines, you can check that. Yeah, I've never done Southwest, but probably. They're all about the same. But like, for Delta, I think if you have status with them, your first two bags are free. And then that third checked bag is like $70, something like that. If you don't, it's 30, 40, and 100. So still, you're $170 getting your animal home. And I've never had an issue with like any remotely decent flight having any thawing. So the longest flight that I've had was coming back with that caribou. And I want to say we had, in total, like a 16-hour run with that, with the layovers, because we had a super long way over in Minneapolis or something, or Seattle maybe.
And I was in Seattle when I did that flight. It was brutal. Yeah, all the night.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it was a red eye. Per usual, anything Pacific time or further west, you're usually flying out like 10 o'clock at night, getting back and doing the next day, and it's brutal. But didn't lose any meat. The very top of the cooler was a teeny bit soft, but still like cold to the touch, like frozen to the touch, just a little bit pliable. So I've never had any issues with lost bags. You sign something typically when you check it in, because obviously it's a duct tape cooler. They ask what's in there. They ask if there's any dry ice. Take the dry ice out prior is typically what I do, because it saves you on some weight too. And then you sign basically a document saying the airline is not responsible if your meat spoils. As long as your bag doesn't get lost or something catastrophic doesn't happen, your meat's not going to spoil.
Yeah.
So
a great example of this is a couple years ago, you and I were out in Montana. I shot a bear fairly early on. We got it on ice, had a couple extra days. And what we did was we threw ice until we could find dry ice, got some dry ice, threw it on there on top, and just cinched it down through it as much in the shade as we could. You and I ended up hunting, like our flight was like early in the morning, and we hunted like up until like the very, very last possible time we could hunt and still make our flight. So we like got back, hardly slept. And what we ended up doing, to your point, is like we waited to the very last minute to get rid of that dry ice. So you just use it as much as you can. Obviously, like you said, you don't want to fly with on, especially if you're taping it down, if you're going to get a popping sensation in the cooler and things are going to get hairy and people are going to get upset. But we basically did that on the way to the flight. You and I stopped at a gas station, taped that thing up like crazy, and like that was it. Flew it home with hide. It was a small bear, so we fit in a decently small size cooler and cape and all, you know, everything. And like you said, I mean, you show up and it's frozen solid.
Yeah, I've never had any issue with it, and especially with spring bear hunts, it works really well because, like, realistically, the amount of meat that you get off of even a big bear, it's surprisingly low. Like, they have small hind ends typically. Their bone structure is huge, so like when you get a back strap off of an elk, it's like that big around and 4 feet long, right? On a bear, it's like a long hot dog. Like, they
Yeah, it
just don't have
is.
much. Yeah, it's weird. So it's not a ton of meat. If you shoot a 250-pound bear, you might be flying home with 45 pounds of meat, I would guess, somewhere around there. So you have a meat cooler and a hide and a skull cooler. And then, of course, you got to get it checked in and sealed and everything like that. But it's just not hard. Every time that I've done it, like, I keep waiting to have like some catastrophic experience with traveling with stuff, but I've just not had it. I mean, I shot the first bull elk I ever shot. I boiled the skull in Montana and wrapped it in bubble wrap and checked it as a check item. And even that went extremely smoothly, surprisingly. So.
People are cool about it. Like, even, I was in Alaska, found a bunch of caribou antlers sheds, and my daughter found one. Actually, she's not here. She's not within earshot, so I can say she was looking and having a hard time, and I ended up finding this giant one that she didn't know I found, and so I just put it on top of a hill. So Ellen was like, "Hey, let's go walk over." She walked. She's like, there's a huge, caribou shed here. Like, I can't believe no one saw this. I'm the first one to see it." So, we basically wrapped it up. We went to back to Anchorage, stopped in Home Depot, wrapped it with bubble wrap, put some trash bags over it, taped it up. It looked like a big U. Shipped it, or we checked it, and it was like not even $50 to take like five of those home. It was ridiculously cheap, and so easy. You got it back. I was kind of hacked off because I get there and the lady's like, "Well, you need to open this." I was like, "Okay, I expected it." She opens it up. And she didn't really wrap it up very well afterwards, and she was just kind of being crappy with it, not really trying that hard. So the whole time I was stressed out and kind of upset about it, but it showed up home just fine. So like I'm waiting to have that moment where you're coming back with meat in some way and it goes horribly wrong. And I'm sure there'll be things that will happen in the future. You do something long enough, something weird happens. This episode is also brought to you by 2O Gear, innovators in technical hunting clothing. 2O is a newer company. It's based right here in Michigan. And whether you're hunting elk in the mountains or chasing antelope in the plains or traipsing through swamps after that ruddy buck, 2O has you covered with premium jackets and pants, merino wool layers, everything you could possibly need to stay comfortable in the woods. Their products are engineered for functionality and durability, ensuring you stay protected in any conditions. Plus, their camo is really effective. We're big fans. So don't take our word for it, though. Go to 2ogear.com and check it out. You strapped us a mule deer head to a backpack that you brought on the plane with you, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a mule deer that I shot that fit like perfectly over top of my carry-on backpack. So I just literally zip tied it to my backpack and got it on as a carry-on. And that was a boiled skull, and then I put bubble wrap around the nose and everything and duct taped the hell out of it. I'm sure it still stunk, but yeah, it worked. But like every time I look at any sort of travel that I'm doing for a hunt, and you make fun of me for wanting to fly everywhere, but and I get it. Like the first elk hunt I ever did, I drove out for it, but it was a 22-hour drive out to South Central Colorado, and by the time I got there, I was so freaking fried, and the flight to Denver to make it a 6-hour drive would have been like $180 kind of thing, and a rental for the week. If you do the U-Haul route, you're looking at, depending on how many miles you're driving, somewhere between $300 and $600. And for the cost difference and the not putting miles on your own vehicle, like, I don't know. It's always treated me well to fly. Even when you kill something, getting it back is not that big of an issue. And two elk ago, I shot a bull in Montana and actually had a flight home, but shot it so early that my buddy that drove out there was like, he had to go home early for some reason. Like, oh, I'll just hop in with you and I'll ride back with you early instead of flying home. And just that drive home from Montana, I'm like, God, this freaking sucks. I should have just hung around for a few days and just flew. But, and we did it this past fall too. Lexi and I went out for antelope and we drove 24 hours to go antelope hunting, shot one on the first day. And like, I just kept thinking the whole time, like, we should have just freaking flew here. This is silly.
I know what you mean. No, it's true. I mean, you show up gassed, you're tired, you're kind of loopy. Even if you're splitting up driving, just being in the car that long just is not conducive to health. I will say, sometimes when I fly, I get real, like my windpipe gets, like, inflamed or something. And so I'll get out, and I feel like I have a little bit of hard time breathing again. And but no, I definitely do see it. But that being said, you know, if anybody who's listening is looking to drive, which is very doable, I've done, you know, I've gone to Colorado a few times driving out to hunt. One time I even took, like, a trailer with a bunch of stuff in it and, like brought everything, not knowing what I would need, in one of the first times I ever hunted out west. And it's very similar. Again, it's just very similar to what you would be doing if you were flying, except you just maybe can bring your own cooler. You know, you can stop and get ice, get more dry ice along the way. My wife, my daughter, and I, we camp quite a bit in the summer, a couple weeks, 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time. And so I've got, you know, different food allergies. So for me, I've got to pack usually a ton of food, ton of pre-made food, that we've actually ended up doing something similar, where it's like, I've got my Yeti cooler. I'll load it with, like, things that I'm going to eat in order, like, last is at the bottom, throw dry ice on it, close it up, and then bring a smaller cooler that's, like, acts as, like, my refrigerator. So I'll, like, take stuff out of that for the one cooler, put it in the other one, and kind of roll with it. So have been doing that for 5, 6 years now. Works great, but I've been able to take a lot of those ideas and a lot of things I've learned just from camping and use it for getting meat home, especially just, like, how to manage ice on something, how to make sure you're burping a cooler and things like that with dry ice. Cause, like, my Yeti, if I don't let a little air out, it will get, like, there is a buildup.
Or it turns into a bomb.
Yeah. 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 You don't want to mess around with that.
Yeah. Especially changing elevations and stuff like that. Even without dry ice, if you have an empty cooler and you change a bunch of elevation, like, it's a vacuum seal getting that thing open. Like, you have to pry that thing open. Or yeah, break the seal with the trains or something. But
or that little dial at the bottom that lets the water out, you know, that little, like, valve, that will help sometimes too.
Yep, something to break that seal. But there's a lot of good ways to go about it. Both have kind of their plus and minuses, yeah, to them. The other big thing about traveling out there with cooler stuff is it's nice to be able to your point, have some kind of pre-planned food that isn't freeze-dried shit. If you're doing truck camping and you want to have, like, a little camp stove or something like that and actually have some decent food, if you're going out there with a big group and doing the wall tent thing, then driving definitely makes more sense. But
yeah,
if you're on a limited vacation schedule or you try to pack as many hunts as you can in a year, I'm definitely camp flying. Like,
yep. It's so easy to do. It's so much easier than it seemed when I first did it.
Yep. Traveling with weapons, traveling with gear. I've never lost, knock on wood, never lost a bag flying for a hunt. I have for work, but and you kind of get used to, like, the routes that historically go well. Like, anything going through MSP to either one of the major Montana airports, golden. MSP's yep, easy with Delta. If I had to fly American, like, doing something Southwest or, like, Southwest United States or Texas, mm-hmm, I'd be a little bit more nervous about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've had bad American Airlines has done me wrong. I tried it again one more time recently, and it left me in Austin, Texas, an extra night and no sleep and, like, yeah, not doing that again.
They're on par with, like, the Frontier, Allegiant, Spirit trash boxes of the world now. But yeah, Delta, United, pretty solid.
Yeah. And one other thing before we wrap up here. So sometimes crossing the border can be a thing. It can be a thing for dry. I did the moose drive this year. And what I had to do was get the moose checked out by a province agency. I can't remember the name of it. I should have pulled it up here, but if you ever go, your guide will certainly let you know. You get it checked out. I cleaned the skull a ton. I spent, you know, after I shot that bull, I, like, spent like a whole day just scraping at it because I was paranoid. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I didn't want to show up and be like, what is, you know, this, you either have to turn around or we're taking this from you. And you know, I didn't know what to expect. So I cleaned it out and then you drive for a day to get to where I crossed the border. And by that time the sun had hit the skull and I had scraped it. It was like pretty clean. But I went through, you know, at least in my personal experience for that trip, especially drove up Portal, North Dakota. I went inside to just say I've got meat and a moose. They asked to see pictures of the hunt, mostly just because they were excited to see what I got. They didn't leave the office. They didn't check out what I did. And I'm sure that's not always the case. And I'm sure, you know, you want to go with a clean skull. You want to have things, get the brain matter out, especially at Joe. I know you spray, use a power sprayer a lot for that. You know, I did what I could with a coat hanger in a full day, which is, you know, just scrape it out and let the dogs eat the brains, which is what I did. But it works pretty well. And like I said, it was just surprisingly easy. I actually, on the way, stopped in Saskatchewan thinking there was a checkpoint right before the border that said, like a checkpoint for anything you killed, whatever. So I thought that was for me. I went in and like we did the whole checkpoint, and like when I was done, I realized I'm pretty sure that's only if I was hunting in that province. But I got double checked, you know, whatever. They didn't seem to care. They didn't really. They're like, oh, I guess we should check this out for British Columbia, you know, whatever. So no, from my experience, even doing something like that is fairly easy. I know it's harder to fly. You have customs to deal with. Shipping is really difficult. I've heard from Canada, although there's a ton of different places that do it, including you know, Worldwide Trophy Adventures. So there's definitely some good options there.
And this upcoming hunt that I've got up in BC might be the first time that I actually utilize some of those services because of my inexperience with getting something done internationally. I'm gonna look into it a little bit more. But
it'd be nice to fly with it just checked because that's not a huge animal you're bringing home, you know.
Yeah, they're bigger than I thought. I was actually looking at that and like getting a guesstimate of how much meat I'll be taking off of this, and they're 325 pounds. So,
dang,
more than I expected. So obviously not as big as an elk. Yeah, I would imagine so. Shoulders and probably pretty big ass neck roast on those. But
yeah.
The other thing with them too is like that hide weight's gonna be pretty substantial, I would think.
True.
So
it
might break out similar to what a large black bear would. I'll have to kind of play it by ear and see. But I'll have some options open for it. I talked to a few other guys that I know that went stone sheep hunting last year, and they flew home with it fine. So,
okay. That's exciting. If you know, everybody listening, you know, these are things. We're trying to share things that we've experienced over the past however long we've been doing it. And like I said, you know, traveling with meat is one we'll get some questions and see questions out there quite a bit about. And so we figured we'd share what works for us. But you know, the tried and true stop at a gas station, buy a cheap cooler, throw some dry ice on it is really hard to beat for most use cases.
Almost all.
So all right, we'll dive into the other episode here in a minute, but appreciate you guys listening in. If you have questions or experiences you want to share, we're always open to learning new things and seeing what you guys are up to. So appreciate you listening in, and we'll talk to you soon. Quick shout out to another amazing sponsor of ours, Kafaru International. If you're like us and love hunting in some of the toughest places, you know how crucial having the right gear is. Kafaru makes some of the toughest, most reliable backpacks and tents out there, and it's all made right here in America. Whether you're hunting in the backcountry or headed to your favorite deer stand, Kafaru has you covered. Keep your eyes out this year, especially as they're launching a ton of amazing new products like the new Arc frame that just came out. So next time you gear up for an adventure, make sure to check out Kafaru International. All right, Eric Clark, welcome back to the Fair Chase Podcast. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm glad we got this going. We talk a bit, but haven't recorded in a while. I figured it was time to get you back on.
Yeah, thanks. No, it's, hey, we do talk quite a bit, so it's fun to do these things like this recorded.
Yeah, I always say it's too, it's like always nicer to record with someone that does podcasting or like maybe is a media personality or whatever, just because like you don't have to work so hard to get somebody to talk. You know, sometimes you have guys that are like bow builders or, you know, they do some kind of whatever skill and it's like they're not a talker on a daily basis. So to have you here is definitely refreshing.
Yeah. Well, I can make it harder for you if you'd like.
Well, you can. Just don't suck, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I mean, you know who your guest is. We'll see.
So I wanted to take it some time, you know, if for people who don't know, Eric was part of founding the Okayest Hunter. And so kind of an interesting media group and different group in kind of the outdoor, the hunting space, and kind of takes a cool approach, I think. I wanted to have you on and just talk about what Okayest Hunter is, why you started it, and just give you a minute to kind of talk about the ideas behind it and kind of, you know, what led you to start Okayest Hunter.
Yeah, wow. Fun. Thanks for the opportunity to have a bit of a platform. I have a bit of a domain hoarder, so there's that. I probably sat on a domain for a year longer or two than anything ever came to any sort of fruition. But what led to me landing on a domain name was 2017, the year my daughter was born. I shot my first ever bow deer with my Bear Empire is what I had. It's single cam.
Oh, yeah, I remember that bow.
Love that bow. I was on the ground on a public piece. It was a conservancy property. So my dad and I had hunted it a few different times. You get drawn for it. So that was my dad hunting. It was like my daughter was born in September. I think it was out in October. So like newborn baby at home. I'm going out with my dad on this piece that, you know, I know a little bit. And I get to a spot and there's already a hunter there. So then I was like, darn it, classic public land, even though it was permission based, but based on the draw, still had some pressure. And so I got to another spot, sat down in a tree, and sure enough, a doe comes through, you know, down kind of the bottom of this draw. And I didn't have a shot on her. Like I wouldn't have felt confident shooting through this thick stuff I was in. She didn't know I was there. Something else might have spooked her. And then right behind me, then another deer came through, and it was like 15 yards away, a little bit uphill from where I was sitting on the base of this tree. Drew back, set my sight pin in, let it rip, and heard that first time ever, the pop, and tractor maybe 20 yards or less. And it was a kill shot right to the heart. Perfect shot. And, you know, because of the angle that I was sitting at, and just because I was on the ground and it was like kind of public land and I thought my hunt was botched because I saw another hunter already, I was so jacked. And then I walked
this
thing and it was tiny. And like my dog was bigger than this. It was a doe call. And I didn't know. I was like, you know, I was taking the shot. It might as well have been a 150-inch buck. Like my adrenaline was pumping, you know?
Yeah.
And so my dad came over. He's like, you did it, man. You got your first deer with a bow. And I instantly felt like a 12-year-old kid all over again. Like my dad half me, with me. He wasn't sitting beside me. He was doing his own hunt on the same property. But that property, actually, the way the rules work on this conservancy, it's a earn a buck. Even though that's not like a state-regulated like thing, yeah. That's how they want to manage their conservancy property. So it's kind of like, well, sweet, I got the doe, so I can come back here later this season and maybe I can whack a buck. Super easy drag out. Like it was no big deal. It was a bit of a hike back in. And so the way out was great. I threw out the roof of my SUV that I had at the time, got home, and there's my first deer with a bow. And so I posted some pictures that my dad took while we were in the field with this thing. And people were like, dude, my dog's bigger than that. Why would you shoot that thing? You're a grown ass man. Don't you know better? It's still a spot. All this stuff. And I was like, well, that's my first bow kill ever. And yes, I'm a grown ass man, but I didn't get into bow hunting until late. And like, I don't know, I felt like pretty annoyed. So then I was kind of, you know, there's like this thing called a reticulator, whatever. Like when your buddy buys a red car, you see red cars everywhere, whatever.
Yeah.
Then I started noticing this kind of shaming thing happening in other places. And when I saw it with like a kid who posted something, I was like, well, geez, is that really what we're dealing with? You know, that's kind of sad. So then I was looking up names like Humble Hunter, and I was like, well, there's some gal called the Humble Huntress. And so I just did my thing and research, and World's Okayest is a thing for everything.
Yeah.
World's Okayest Hunter, World's Okayest Mom, World's Okayest Dad, World's Okayest Surfer. Like it's across the board. And actually the copyright's going to be taken down because it's too obtuse. So, and you being in law and going studying law, like you might have some understanding of that more than I would even.
For sure.
I hired an attorney and we got a registered trademark for Okayest Hunter. So like okayest by itself. I was like, I'm the okayest. And the reason that I was kind of calling our old podcast, Where to Hunt, the okayest podcast in the Midwest for some time, I was trying to like take this offensive approach of getting ahead of any shame that I might receive on the internet, to because I didn't have deer in my wall at the time when I started this. I wasn't an expert. I'm still not an expert. I never claimed to be. And so I want to have people on that had some success under their belt and take this like disposition of I'm in a learning stage, pontificating onto you that I know what I'm talking about. I'm taking a different approach. So I was really always trying to be this humble, humility driven voice. And the okayest stuff started to stick. So about okayesthunter.com, met a buddy for coffee that was a listener of the former podcast, Where to Hunt, and pitching the idea of Okayest Hunter. He's like, dude, that's totally me. I get it 100%. His name's Tyler Mead, and he runs the business with me. He bought in right away and was like, let's go. And so that was like August of 2019. We just kind of tempidly started putting some stuff out on the internet, on IG and Facebook. And then in 2020 of June, we officially like codified the LLC, started the website. And so that's when the business was officially born.
That is interesting. I like that you went with okayest. Humble hunter feels, I mean, even though you're saying you're humble, it feels a little braggy.
Yeah.
You know? So I do like that. And I've liked your kind of, I don't know, you just kind of like poke fun at you guys, you know, like.
Oh, very self-deprecating.
Yeah. Yeah. It's refreshing because you know, we've seen this before where it's like everybody, if you're some sort of hunting media person, you have to be an absolute expert in this. And if you get one little thing wrong, you know, people come out of the woodwork and give you a hard time. So I feel like you also just head that off a little bit. It's like, all right, you want to come give me a hard time? I already admitted to being the okayest.
Yeah, I already said I was okay. Like, you're not, people actually will say that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you realize, have you seen our logo? Like, do you realize who you're talking to? Like, I'm not, my feelings aren't hurt, buddy. You're not going to say anything that's going to be worse than what I've already said to myself. Like,
yeah.
You know, have at it. You're just throwing punches that aren't going to land. Like, you're just wasting your energy on me.
Big thanks to Vortex Optics for sponsoring this podcast as well. Most hunters know how important clear, reliable glass is in the woods. In fact, we don't hit the woods without some form of optics in our hands. Vortex Optics offers a wide range of high-quality binoculars and scopes and rangefinders, things that are perfect for hunting or bird watching or whatever you're doing outside. Their world-class products also come with an amazing warranty. I've actually used it, and it's really fast and easy to use. So whether you're spotting a big bear across a drainage or lining up that perfect shot, make sure you're doing it with Vortex Optics. No, it's fun. It's fun to follow. It's always fun. You have a bunch of funny stuff that you post, and it's very, very entertaining. So, like, you know, as you've grown the okayest hunter, like, let's talk about that. Tell me, like, about humor and humility. How has that played out? How has that been received since you first started?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that funny. I'm like 38 now, as of a couple days ago, and I'm now like, and I have three kids, so I'm getting into this awkward dad stage where I'm becoming like my parent. So there's that. But I read the book Play Bigger, which is, it kind of was born out of the Y Combinator, you know, folks out of California, the business moguls that build, you know, Apple and other businesses like that, Uber and so forth. And they had this whole bit about like, do things different, not better. Like, if you can't do it better, go different. And so I looked around the category, and I'm like, we're not going to be a better deer camp than working class as far as their vibe. We're not going to be, you know, what's the college one? Where they do all the deer study stuff. I can't think of
that. Oh, yeah.
Deer MSU or whatever it is.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. I like that.
We're not going to be more scientific than them. We're not going to, like, I was just, how can we be different? And so just even looking around the category, like, we're still the only 6-inch antler in the entire industry that I'm aware of. Because everyone else has logos that have beautiful drop tie racks. And, like, that's great. That's fine. But different, not better. And so the example of the book was the 5-hour energy drink. In a time when energy drinks are so saturated, like, we didn't need another energy drink in the cold section of the fridge, or like, we have coffee and Bang and, you know, Red Bull and Monster and all these things. But like a 5-ounce little tiny shot at the front of the counter, you don't have to drink, you know, gratuitous amounts of liquid that's going to send you to the bathroom 18 times on a road trip. You can just guzzle this one thing and you're good to go. Like, different, not better.
Yes.
I still might like an energy drink for a different reason. I still might like the Working Class Bow Hunter or like Deer University or whatever for a different reason. So when we started launching our stuff, what happened was something that I didn't anticipate or expect, which was a lot of people started sending us DMs of their spike bucks and basket rack like that like didn't see the light of the day on the internet. Like I would go look at their profiles and those deer didn't exist.
Yeah.
Publicly displayed. But they wanted to share them with us to share the story. Like, hey, this is my first out of state hunt I ever did, but I didn't want to share this deer because like it wasn't you know, what I would normally shoot. So I was uncomfortable. Or hey, this is my last hunt with my grandma. Like
yeah.
You know, stuff like that. And fast forward. So that was like a pretty special thing. I was like, holy shit. Like, I think we're creating some safe space here, which is weird. I wouldn't normally, you know, try to claim something like that. Sorry, my texts are going crazy right now.
It's Tyler trying to get a hold of you.
I don't know how to make it stop. I yelled at Greg for last night on our podcast. So instead I'd throat punch him. Anyway, so that happened. But fast forward now, like four-ish years into it, and those deer now live on the internet. People now are tagging us.
Yeah.
Never pass, shooter buck. We're trying to like normalize these things. And people DM us all the time, like, if it weren't for you guys, I wouldn't have shot this deer. I would have thought I only could take a 150 or whatever. I'm like, it's cool. But also I'm shocked that like people need or think they need that kind of permission. And I think that probably exists in like the gym community. Like, oh, I'm too big to go to the gym or start. But like maybe they see someone trying, they then feel, oh, if you're doing it now, I feel like I can. So it's just, it's a human thing, not like a hunting thing, but I didn't anticipate or expect that. So that's been a really interesting thing that we're like, there's a Remy Warrens of the world and the Beau Martonics, and these are really good humans. There's nothing wrong with them. Very aspirational. Yeah. These guys are guys that can guide a hunt. You don't want me to guide your hunt. It'll go terrible. We'll probably fucking die. But like, there's a lot of us out there that are not guides, so to speak. And so I wanted to speak to the everyday hunter in a way that like takes away some of the gladiator movie scenes of walking through the tall grass. Like maybe not everything has to be so dramatic. It's a deer. Like,
I like that. I like that, you know, as I've been thinking about kind of this podcast with you, just you're almost encouraging people to be more honest about what they're up to and what they're doing in the woods. Like you're, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that deer that I don't tell anybody and I only post big bucks that I shoot, that the smaller buck that I shot, I feel like I can at least talk about now, which is kind of weird, kind of a weird thing that we've created. But what you're doing is makes it, you know, makes people feel more comfortable to share what's just the truth about how things go. Or maybe, like you said, you're on your last hunt with your grandma, or this is the biggest deer that has ever been shot in this family land or whatever it is. You know, you get to share it and not feel weird sharing it.
Yeah. And it's just, it's always about more than just the kill or the hunt or the trophy. I think the whole experience is the trophy. And, you know, just don't beat yourself up. And, you know, sometimes you have off seasons or life changes. I mean, having three kids under six, so this is a season of life. If I talk on this podcast in 10 years from now, I might be the biggest buck killer in the world. I don't know. But for now, that ain't the case. And that has to be a reality that I have to like accept and understand. Otherwise, I'm going to be very misaligned with like what I expect from the woods, and then I'm going to have a bad time. But I shot a tiny 8-pointer of my gun last season, and for half a second, I was like, shit, I stepped backwards. You know what?
Yeah.
I shot that one the season before. So I was like, this is the season I had. Like, I only got out a handful of times. And when I brought the meat home the other week, my daughter she gave like two snack sticks like right out of the gate and going.
There you go. Yeah. Well, they go fast.
You know, there's just things that I think are important to consider. So I always like to make sure that people don't get it twisted. Like, we're not then shaming on people shooting big bucks. It's your hunt. You hunt how you want. It's your tag. You punch it how you want. Like, we're not here to cast judgment. We're here to be, I don't know, like accepting of anyone from any path, so long as you're doing it ethically and legally. Like, good. We need, you know.
No, I like that. That's definitely how we think. I mean, obviously, we'll shoot the biggest buck that we can find in the woods and do on occasion. But also, I've shot quite a few 110-inch bucks, and like, giant smile on my face and feel like I'll post it all over. I'm screaming that from the rooftop. You know, like, that's awesome. It's so much fun. You know, we get 2 buck tags in Michigan, so I also have a little bit of the freedom to do that as well.
That's kind of nice. Yeah, we get 2 here in Wisconsin, 1 archery, 1 rifle.
Right.
And so, like, archery is a solo endeavor. You know, it's kind of like mano-y-mano, and they had a rough season last year in the best way possible. I had opportunity at 150-inch deer, and that was the first time I've ever had an opportunity to deer that big on hoof in the deer woods, and yeah, I just didn't close the deal on it. Did I beat myself up? I mean, a little bit, but also, like, holy shit, I did it, kind of. Like, I was in the game. And so when this little guy walked out in gun season, I was like, you're getting it, pal. Like, I don't... Boom. Like, this is a different category of hunting for me. Gun hunting is not the same. It's got its own merit. It's like a different book, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree. The way that I approach both is very different. Very, very different. I like what you said, because it's like, you didn't shoot that 150, you know, plus inch deer, but you saw it. You're getting closer to it. And it's like, at least this year, this is the first time you've ever done that. What's next year going to be? And then the year after that, you start building a little bit on the things you learn. And, you know, it's that makes, at least for me, hunting so much fun, because you can spend so much time learning every single time you go out, doing something different, trying something new. And so, like, every season is just an opportunity to get better or to see more things or see something different. I love, that's like one of my favorite parts of hunting.
Yeah. The knowledge compounds and you have such a thirst to, like, conquer the game. But then there's this 9-month break in between when you can play next. So you're like, damn it, I've learned. I finally got past that level and beat that bad guy.
Yeah.
Now I have to wait 5 months to try again. Like, damn it. So then there's, like, some attrition that happens. Like, your knowledge, and then you have to go apply it again. So, like, if you could just hunt year round, like, we could all be really, really effective killers. But, like, you know, it's like summer break with kids in school. They have to spend the first semester relearning the shit they forgot last year because they had a summer up.
That's right. It's like one step back, you know, during the summer. So, I do like that. You try to get out and you do things like predator hunting. You got turkey hunting in the spring and try to get, you know, you get some stuff out west in the early summer, because we start here in October, but it's like whitetail deer, their own thing. And so, like, the first, you know, it's like every year I get my tree saddle and sticks out and had to climb up a tree, and it feels like I haven't climbed up in a tree saddle in years, and I forgot everything. It's like, usually my first sit is a total disaster.
Yeah, you're like re-establishing like your routine and pattern and stuff. And like that next season, you're just a total season pro, but like out of the gate, you're like, why am I so bad at this? Like, what? You're like missing steps in your brain. You're like, where do I put this thing? Where is that stuff? Like, where's my gear strap? How do I
drop and stuff?
Do I need my bow on? Like, what's going on? Or you've added new things. So you have to like relearn how you're going to do this now or do that now or reconfigure this setup in your pack or whatever. It's just, but that's fun. It's really fun to do that. But I'm talking about like the 150 that busted me from behind a bush without me moving. He didn't win me. He did catch me moving, but like barely.
Yeah.
And it was clearly enough to like, he just slowly walked back then and then just disappeared again. He didn't run. He didn't, you know, blow. He just stared at me through a bush for like what felt like 5 minutes. And then I started shaking. Okay, maybe he does see that. Like, damn it. You know, they're so smart. So like, how will I play that out differently this time? And I know the moves I could have made, because in hindsight, it's 2020. I know exactly how I could, and I still would have probably found ways to mess it up. It's like that movie with Tom Cruise where he like the Tomorrowland or whatever, he keeps getting a little bit further, but like every time you get further, it's a new learning. So like I would have positioned my saddle and my platform a little bit differently to have the tree conceal me a little bit more, knowing where he would have been coming from, which I should have anticipated and known. So dumb mistake there, but then I still could have maybe pulled it off, you know?
Well, the thing is, for a buck like that, and I've had that exact type of situation before where they, like a more mature deer comes in and like, he'll like this one, the one I had seen was actually even just tending a doe. Like it pushed this doe in front of me, and it was crazy, cause I turn around and it's like twice the size of the doe that it's following. You could just see like a barrel behind him. Like, holy cow, you know, came in on the total wrong side that I was expecting. And he kind of stepped in, and I think my wind swirled real quick. But I'm not sure, or he saw somehow, I don't know what happened, but it was the same thing where he kind of stopped, kind of looks around, and he like backpedals and just, he doesn't run away, but he just leaves. Even though it was a doe he was tending, he was just out of there.
Well, I was a little overconfident because there's a small 2-year-old eight running around in the same area. And I'd drawn back on that thing 3 times and flung an arrow and just straight up missed. I don't know what happened. in that sense, I felt like, well, I drew back on that deer 3 times. He didn't see me. He had no idea. I shot at him. He didn't know. Like,
yeah.
So then I had a little bit too much confidence. And then so when the big guy came out, and I was playing a little bit different at that point, but I didn't anticipate like how much wiser that deer was.
They react to danger. It's like a younger buck just blows out of there. It seems like this one was like, they just act different. They're like, when they walk in, everything's very cautious. You know, it's just a totally different animal when they get older.
Yeah. So yeah, good stuff. Fun learnings there. But yeah, of course the OKS hunter couldn't pull it off. I kayaked out there and shit. I was like,
that's so cool just, though. How cool do you feel kayaking to your spot? You know? Yeah. Well, how cool do you feel when you kayak into a spot? I always feel cool.
It's a higher level of adventure, I think.
Yeah.
Plus, the drag's way easier.
Yeah, it is. It's flopping on. It's like, I always, though, I'll kayak in with like one kayak, and it's like pretty hard to take a deer into a single kayak with all your hunting stuff, too. And so it's always like, maybe this is the time I should, you know, tie the small, I got like a smaller kid's kayak, like tie that one to the back and float it out. But I feel like that's like a little presumptuous.
Yeah. It's like prenuptial, you know, agreement of marriage. Like, well, I don't want to like, you know, jinx this shit.
Yeah. You're never going to shoot anything. You bring that second kayak out.
I'm running a solo canoe by Old Town. So it's like the size of a small kayak, but yeah, it has the openness of the canoe. And then you sit in it rather than on top, like a canoe, you're on that bench.
Yeah.
This thing seats kind of attached to the floor. So I really enjoy it. I also got rid of my truck last year. So like I can just throw this on my car and like I got pretty efficient with it last season.
You could throw it on top. Is it on top?
Yeah, I just toss it on top of my car and just strap it down real quick. It's good to go.
Yeah.
No big deal. It's tiny. But like because it's open, it would totally handle a deer. No problem.
Interesting. That's actually pretty sweet. Yeah, mine are like the kayaks that are kind of like you, there's no bottom. It's just like a flat thing that you kind of sit in.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I could, yeah, I don't know. I've done it and it was dicey. Like,
the spot I was hunting, those things are a beast. That doesn't fit on the car really well. It's super heavy. They're large. Like I could stand on it and it's not going to tip a rock. I brought both my kids on a lake with it, but the river I was going up was so shallow that the pedal prop would be scraping on the bottom.
Yeah.
So I could just, you know, paddle my way out there, but I was like, well, at that point, then I want to bring the little guy, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's sweet. That's sweet, man. I can't wait to hunt again. Like turkey season's coming up and then, you know, you got some fall stuff and stuff. What do you guys have planned for the year?
I think we got some turkey hunts with the crew. Derek and Greg got tags for early season. I'll try to remember to buy my leftover for the latter half and. Yes, I kind of want to make a go of it on my own this year. I went out with Greg and Matt. Matt owns Weathered Oaks Game Calls, so he came out and called. Greg set me up on a spot on a private piece. So the farmer, you know, Greg's like, I'm putting you on the X, and he wasn't wrong. Like, he sat down, heard turkeys gobble. They were working over from one field to the next. Matt called them. They came to the decoy. I shot it. It was like, all right. There's no way if I go by myself, it's going to go like that. So I want to kind of throw my own hat in the ring and see how I can stack up. It's very confusing to me, turkeys. It wasn't nearly as exciting, but it had a different flavor of hunt and I enjoyed it for different reasons. So
yeah, turkeys are different. It's definitely its own thing. And I've personally, speaking of like learning, like turkey, my turkey, you know, like process and of learning about how to hunt them has been very fun. Like I just have a blast. I feel less pressure. You know, there's action, there's movement. You're out in the woods at different times. So definitely a fan of that. But well, hey, we're coming up on time and Joe's going to remind me that I say that every time I end an episode, but we are coming up on time. Eric, how can people who are listening follow along, like check his stuff out? You have cool merchandise. You do a podcast, you do tons of stuff. Where can they follow what you're up to?
Yeah, I mean, super easy. Just okshunter.com. will be the hub where you can check out the merch, find our YouTube, follow our socials, you know, whatever. Wherever you go from there, it's up to you. There's lots to engage with. So that'd be where I would send folks.
Awesome. You're doing cool work. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, man.